Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Leaders Speak, focusing on the intersection of technology and government mission. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. 21st century government has sought to use information technology to improve performance and leverage the power of technology to deliver better results faster. U.S. government agencies are under tremendous pressure to do more, to do it better, while doing it cheaper. To that end, they are using technology to make operations more responsive, accessible, transparent, and accountable, while meeting the needs and expectations of citizens. With an annual IT budget of over $80 billion, the United States government is the world's largest purchaser of information technology. Ensuring that such a sizable sum of money is managed and spent properly and in accordance with the public trust must be front and center. However, a history marked by fragmentation, poor project execution, and the drag of legacy technology has made this important endeavor even more difficult, but ever more pressing. Given such unsustainable conditions, the current administration has made IT and its management a central priority. Technology is a powerful tool, but it alone will not improve performance. Making government more transparent, participatory, and collaborative may require technology, but if it's done right, it can also help federal agencies manage its resources more effectively. What are the challenges facing government IT leaders? How is government modernizing and securing its IT infrastructure? What about current and future IT trends? And how has the role of CIO evolved to meet the demands of today? We will explore these questions and so much more with a host of government technology leaders. Our guests will share some of the more compelling insights and perspectives and offer their extended reflections on the intersection of government mission and technology. First up, what do federal CIOs consider their most important challenges? Over the years, I've asked government IT leaders this very question. There are a handful of common challenges topping the list, such as IT infrastructure, cybersecurity, governance, and workforce. While many of these common challenges remain, how they are being prioritized and tackled may vary depending on the agency resources and strategic mission. Here's Vance Hitch, CIO at Justice, on the critical challenges he's facing managing the IT footprint of a department composed of 40 different components.
It's a challenge running a large, I'm like the conglomerate CIO, so we have the 40 different components. Each has a specific mission that fits within the overall justice mission, but has its own thing. So what I try to do is to make sure that we are working at a common purpose. We also have an overall enterprise architecture that really speaks to how all this should fit together, IT should fit together as a department. So it includes, at the high level, all of our infrastructure, and it breaks down into all the applications that we have across the whole department. What I try to do, and what our enterprise architecture helps me do, is to figure out where it makes sense to do things in common, where enterprise solutions make sense, where common solutions make sense. I always try to work with the CIOs of the specific components, and my goal is for them to focus on the mission of their component. And if they can focus their dollars and their energies on that, they shouldn't have to worry as much about the things that we do in common. I don't want them to be reinventing the same things that are happening either at the department level or elsewhere. So that's what we try to achieve. Certainly, I have a lot of challenges. I always put cybersecurity at or near the top. It's a major, major issue today for not only for the Department of Justice, for every entity, every corporate entity, or even small businesses in the United States. Cybersecurity is a major challenge for us and has been for a long time. I am very proud of what we've done at the department, but it's a major challenge. We're never good enough. Information sharing was a very important thing. Information sharing, obviously has been a big challenge. Enterprise solutions in general are very difficult to do. While it's what I try to do all the time, and one of my main jobs is to make sure that we are doing enterprise solutions where it makes sense, they're very hard to do because the government is a large organization. Our Department of Justice in and of itself is a very complex, large organization. making that happen. It's true in corporate America, too. You know, developing a corporate-wide enterprise solution is very difficult. The government is just that much bigger and, you know, it's more difficult to make change happen, more difficult to get things done in common. So very much I would emphasize the management aspects of my job. I mean, the idea of leading change across that kind of organization and implementing enterprise solutions, while I'm proud of what we've done, that's certainly one of the challenges.
In the midst of its seventh year, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has a steadfast mission. And in an increasingly interconnected and networked world, technology plays a critical role in DHS successfully meeting its mission, securing the homeland. Richard Spires, CIO at DHS, outlines his important charge and the challenges he faces.
The reason I'm the CIO here and accepted the position is because I believe IT is a foundational and critical element to the success of an organization such as Homeland Security. In fact, I would say that it is as important as any function in assuring mission effectiveness today. The scope and scale of the organization, quite large, 200,000 employees plus, quite a few different mission sets from the standpoint that we actually have 22 individual operating organizations. I have the overarching responsibility and authority over the whole IT function for DHS. Spent about 3 months or so really assessing where I thought the organization was in its use of IT and how we were managing IT overall throughout DHS. I really found three areas that are primary importance that I'm trying to address. First, we need to improve how we manage, particularly our largest IT investments. We have some very, very good people across the board. But overall, I would say we're just not managing many of these investments as well as we need to. And so this whole area of both program reviews, essentially my version of the tech stats that Vivek Kundra has done, based on those, there's been significant changes to some programs based on those reviews. But going forward, it's really about institutionalizing, if you will, best practices and really working to make sure that the proper governance and oversight exists for these programs and the proper disciplines are being implemented in these programs to manage them effectively. We have the Data Center Consolidation Initiative within the Department of Homeland Security, our OneNet initiative to bring together one physical network infrastructure. There's other things we're doing. We're rolling out things like rationalizing our Active Directory structure, our email as a service offering through these two data centers. There's a number of things we're doing at an enterprise level that we need to get done. And then the third area is kind of an interesting one, and I think goes to the heart of really trying to be one DHS, as the Secretary's discussed. While we're one department, too often we still operate as up to 22 different component organizations. And how that manifests itself in IT is there's just too much of building similar things across these different organizations and not enough leverage and information sharing. Can't get any of this done without a really good staff. We need to have a strong government employee base within our IT functions to make this work. And so getting that right balance, I think, is really critical.
Along with securing the homeland, technology plays a significant role in air safety and ensuring that planes take off and land in a safe and secure manner. On a daily basis, 8,000 commercial and 18,000 private aircraft operate close to 50,000 flights per day in U.S. airspace. Doing this safely and efficiently involves maintaining the world's largest air navigation and communications infrastructure, which relies significantly on information technology. Here's Dave Bowen, CIO at FAA, highlighting his important role and the challenges he faces in that role.
Well, my role as the FAA's CIO is primarily to act as the primary advisor to the administrator on all IT matters. I'm responsible for all IT policy in the agency, and then I have areas of my operational department which focus on research and development, cybersecurity, oversight of our IT investments, oversight of our privacy initiatives, records, directives, a lot to do with our enterprise architecture and enterprise-wide initiatives, and IT optimization. The top three challenges, I think they're probably more than just three, but let me hit the top three. Number one would be driving IT benefits and coordination of our IT operations inside of what we call a federated organization. Our lines of business in the FAA own and manage their own infrastructure, applications, things like that. And my role is to sort of coordinate those activities across the agency. A second area of focus, and this is my primary operational role in the agency, is that my department provides cybersecurity services to all the lines of business across the agency. And as you're probably aware, this is an ongoing challenge. It makes us drive toward deploying cybersecurity technology, drives us to closer linkages with federal agencies, and staying on top of our technology investments. The third area, it's an area that's growing in scope and importance, is oversight of our IT investments and reporting those up, making sure that things in our programs are on track. They go up to what we call our Joint Resources Council, who oversees all of the FAA acquisition efforts, and then on up to the Department of Transportation and eventually to the federal government IT dashboard. So we certainly play in that space.
Many of these challenges are hardly unique to the federal government. State and local CIOs are also facing enormous challenges and are under tremendous pressure to do more and do it better. Technology has helped these governments do just that, and nowhere is this more evident than in the delivery of human services. Here's Richard Seamer, CIO at the New York City Human Resources Administration, on the IT challenges he faces at the local level.
Well, the first one is managing our budget. There's no end to the amount of innovation and work that is being asked of us to do. So to that end, and especially because we've been forced to reduce our budgets lately, and that goes back to the being responsible part that I talked about before to the taxpayers, we've had to make some tough decisions, and we've had to balance and decide where can we reduce costs, what ultimately can we do with those savings when we do reduce costs, and how can we more efficiently manage the work that we have to do. So the dollar thing and the budget thing is a big deal. Governance is another big issue. Governance is, to some people, a four-letter word because you're trying to impose some sort of control over people and you're trying to make people responsible. Now, I've been very fortunate, I think, in that, again, I have a good team of people, but the people that I deal with on the program side get it. I've established a relationship with these people, so they're responsive, and I can talk to them about it. But the way we deal with it is we meet regularly with the staff, the program staff. We go through what we're working on. We make sure that the priority lists are what they are supposed to be, you know, and then we make changes because whether it's from the program side or we get mandates, which is another difficult thing. That's how we deal with the governance issue, basically. The third thing is strategic planning. Part of the, I think, challenge of being in the public sector is trying to deal with the cycles, the political cycles, if you will. Now, we've been very fortunate. We have, Mayor Bloomberg is a mayor who understands and gets IT. So we feel that kind of support, and that comes straight down through the deputy mayor, and Commissioner Dore is great. Commissioner Dore has actually elevated the position of CIO within HRA to a direct report to him, and I think that that was a smart thing. But it also gives you some sort of empowerment, too.
What are government agencies doing to enhance IT governance and modernize their technology infrastructure? We will explore these topics and so much more when we return to this special edition of the Business of Government Hour. From contaminated peanut butter to spinach, our food safety net has shown signs of fraying, with tainted products slipping through to retail shelves, causing human harm and economic ruin. Pick up the latest Senate report on food safety and find out how critical private-public partnerships are enhancing the current food safety system in America. You can order or download a free copy of this and all of our reports at businessofgovernment.org. What is risk management? How do you manage risk more effectively? How can risk management lead to better decision-making? And what about applying risk management in government? Pick up the Center's report, Managing Risk in Government, An Introduction to Enterprise Risk Management, and find out. This report is especially timely given the Obama administration's focus on accountability and transparency, which has prompted a renewed focus on proper risk management and controls. You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to this Leaders Speaks edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation on the intersection of government mission and technology. Many government agencies are hamstrung by old and aging infrastructure that needs replacing, but you can't stop what you're doing in order to update what you need. So the question is, how best to implement and maintain an IT infrastructure that will support current and future needs? Here's Vance Hitch, CIO at Justice, on his IT strategy and efforts to modernize.
We have an IT strategic plan. We have an enterprise architecture that's built on that. They are constantly, they evolve. I'm not going to say they change drastically, but they evolve as the goals of the department evolve. So when we do a strategic planning effort at the department, we make sure that we're fitting in with that. Then, obviously, within that, my job as the CIO is to make sure that we're focused on the mission of the department, but then also we're being effective and efficient in doing so. And in order to do that, we have to, where appropriate, share solutions, share acquisition power, share infrastructure. So leveraging the IT, making sure we got the right solutions and then leveraging them as much as possible, I would say, is the general strategy that I have that's laid out in the specifics of our IT strategic plan. It is a very tough job because, you know, when you think of the DOJ components, as I said, it's like a conglomerate, and we have very large components like the FBI, DEA, ATF, Bureau of Prisons, others. And then we have very small components. What we try to do is to find the happy medium, find where we can share, find the level at which we can share. I mean, I think I would not be successful if I came in with some plan that said, okay, here we're going to standardize on this and that's the end of the game and we're going to have this happen over 18 months. That it's got to evolve. So that's part of our plan to really make sure that we are leveraging what we have. We have done a lot of standardization. Likewise, in the application area, we have a lot of enterprise solutions. That's one thing I've really pushed for since I've been at the department. So we have so many enterprise solutions. One of the things that I have tried to emphasize to our components is that, as I said, I want them to focus primarily on their mission. But if something exists that they have, I'm not just saying that my organization is the one that's got to have an enterprise solution. If they've got something so darn good, let's leverage that across the department. So we're also into trying to make sure that we're leveraging whatever exists, wherever it exists in the department.
The creation of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security brought together 22 disparate organizations, almost all with legacy IT systems. Forging an enterprise approach takes strategy and balance. Here's Richard Spires, CIO at DHS, explaining his IT strategy.
I'm a real believer that you need to decide where you draw that line in a department like the Homeland Security between what really should be provided as an enterprise service versus what should be provided component specific. And then some of those are easy. The data centers and having those and driving towards data center consolidation really is an enterprise function. We want to move away from components each having their own data centers and bring that stuff together. Great economies of scale, improved network security, efficiencies from a cost and operations perspective, all the good things we talk about even at the federal level, right, that we're working on right now with Vivek Kundra and the CIO Council. But drawing that line is important. Where do we draw that line of what's enterprise versus what's component? To the degree we can continue to refine that, it's a big part of that strategy, continuing to refine that where that line is drawn. Really trying to drive a governance model that helps us define where there's leverage potential that should be enterprise, okay? We have a number of these command centers, and there's technology that supports them. I can think of 12 different common operating pictures that we've built. do we really need 12 different common operating pictures, right? So that's the kind of leverage I'm talking about and reuse potential and standardization potential that we have. That common operating picture should go from above the line, where it's just component specific, to below the line, where it's really an enterprise capability that's provided. And then built in such a way that it's tailorable, right? Configurable, let's call it that, to the particular mission need. And that's the kind of things that we're trying to drive from a strategy perspective.
Dave Bowen, the CIO at FAA, offers his insights into forging a technology strategy within a federated environment.
From a strategic standpoint, what we're trying to do in the FAA is take this federated environment that we have and have all of the players work together so that we can sort of mimic a highly centralized and highly standardized kind of environment, the type of environment you often find in commercial firms. So the strategy then is to obtain the benefits of standardization, consolidation in a federated environment. And those benefits would be things like economies of scale, you know, cost effectiveness, efficiencies, speed of response, things like that. That's kind of our overall strategy. We're working on modernizing and standardizing our IT infrastructure through our IT acquisition approval process. And one of the parts I play there is that about 6 months after I got to the FAA, I asked the administrator for and received permission to be a signer on all IT acquisitions over $250,000. So that's given me visibility to what people are buying across the agency and helps us reduce duplication, make sure that people aren't, you know, working on similar initiatives and we can leverage our purchasing power a little bit more. The other thing that I use is our CIO Council, which is our council of our line of business CIOs. We established a charter for that body, and then we actually established what we call operating principles that really govern how we're going to make decisions on an enterprise-wide basis. The other thing that we're doing, obviously, is on the IT asset management and investment management front. We're evaluating the IT dimensions of all FAA major programs, and that's going on pretty much all the time.
Given that FAA carries out multiple and complex missions, its information technology requirements and portfolio reflect that complexity. Bowen elaborates on efforts to foster an enterprise view and break down silos where it makes sense.
So we work on that in two ways, basically. We look primarily at enterprise-wide applications where support for all lines of business in a given application is the same. And we also focus on the IT infrastructure, what you would know as the utility portion of the IT, which is largely the same for all of our lines of business. And so those are the areas of focus. For enterprise-wide applications, we use a model that basically takes one of the lines of business and establishes that as what we call a managing partner. And this is all done through discussion and collaboration. And the managing partner is basically set up to provide that enterprise-wide application across the FAA, operate that application for all the lines of business using performance metrics and service level agreements. We're doing this now with our internet access point consolidation efforts and with some efforts around our data loss prevention program. So in a sense, we sort of create a virtual centralized organization for that particular capability. On the infrastructure front, it's a matter of getting our lines of business to agree on standards and beginning to consolidate infrastructure. Things like server virtualization, things like that, are good examples of what we're doing there. We're also looking at the data center optimization. Obviously, there's a big push now from OMB to have agencies inventory their data centers and develop a plan to consolidate those. And we've actually had that initiative underway now for about 2 years. You asked about obstacles. The obstacles are significant. You know, this is a very distinct environment, different environment than what we see in the private sector and what I saw in my previous life. We have cultural obstacles. We have behavior obstacles. We have history obstacles. We have obstacles around the fact that certain lines of business may have received a certain appropriation for some of the things they're doing. And how to drive consolidation across business lines is a challenge. But I'm happy to report that we're making progress and we've got more and more people in the agency thinking enterprise-wide.
CIOs across the federal government and even in private sector face this challenge of having very complex missions to serve, as well as trying to break down the silos and leverage the enterprise through collaboration and, more importantly, IT governance. Vance Hitch explains his efforts in this area.
I think one of the key things in terms of being successful is you've got to create partnerships. You've got to gain trust. You have to prove yourself. And that just doesn't happen overnight. So I think I've tried to get personal relationships. I've tried to have good, solid business relationships with all of our components because I respect all of them and the mission that they have within the department. We obviously have governance, and as the CIO, I'm responsible for IT policy. So, you know, obviously our policies kind of back that up. Our IT strategic plan backs up that up. One of the tools that that I have that actually was required of us by the Hill is something we call the DIRB, the Department IT Investment Review Board. And that's where for any very, very large IT project, it goes before the IT review board and has to be certified. I actually run the DIRB on behalf of the Deputy Attorney General so that I have some help pushing these things. And that's been very, very helpful. So in addition to the certifications, we just have general reviews of those projects too. So and it just doesn't happen once. It happens on a periodic basis. I don't care how well the project is going, and we all know that big projects have problems. Every 3 to 6 months, we review the project, wherever it is in its life cycle. In addition to that, for all projects, those are for the very largest. For all projects, I have a CIO dashboard. And all the components report up to me about all of their projects and kind of bring things to my attention. I'm trying to help them in any way I can to be successful on those projects.
Richard Spires, CIO at DHS, underscores that in the end, IT and technology requires a collaborative effort.
And that's where governance comes in, okay? So I'm a huge believer, if you can get the right people at the right level around the table with a shared sense of mission or outcome, you really can drive some amazing things. And I saw it. I saw it in the private sector, and I particularly saw it what we were able to do at the IRS, where we were able to draw and bring diverse people together, but really come out with mission objectives that they could all agree to and then drive to them, even though they lived in different organizations. I'm working to do the same thing here. Are we as far as I'd like to be? Of course not. But some successes, okay? Two that I would allude to right now. One, we have stood up an IT services governance board. All those enterprise services were, you know, the data centers and OneNet and the Active Directory rationalization, emails of service. That's what this board's all about. Okay, they're the ones that are working those issues, making that happen, and I think to a very effective way. Domain awareness is another function we could do much better in coordinating and could have a governance function. I think it's critical to get the collaboration to drive these things forward. And it helps from an IT perspective, what do we do? But the more important thing is it helps from a mission effectiveness perspective.
Mission effectiveness is critical, and so is aligning IT resources in support of mission, which rests on making wise IT investments. Spires continues.
So to the degree that we're doing things from an enterprise perspective where it makes sense, that's obviously a much more effective, cost-effective way to do it. That being said, there's certainly other things that we're looking to do to help drive cost efficiencies above and beyond that. Number one, I'm a big proponent that we need to be a smart buyer. We're spending $6.4 billion in IT in this department. We need to buy smartly. We need to leverage that buying power in the best way. That's certainly another area where we're trying to drive cost effectiveness. Any expenditure that's in excess of $2.5 million does pass through my office for review. So we're looking at it from a making sure it aligns to the enterprise architecture, making sure that it fits within what that component's strategy really is, and again, trying to identify leverage opportunities, not duplicating things, getting that most efficient use of funds possible.
After you make the right IT investments, then you need to properly manage those investments.
You know, first and foremost, in order to effectively manage programs, IT programs, you need the right program management office, and you need a qualified PM. And I mean, obviously, putting in and integrating off-the-shelf software is very different than building custom-developed code. We're looking for a qualified program manager, that doesn't just have the schooling, but also has the real-world experience, the backup that he or she can really effectively manage at whatever level that size and complexity that program is. There's a whole set of disciplines and tools you use to do this kind of work for IT programs. And bringing those best practices along with that talent for that particular set of issues, these are all really critical roles that I believe need strong government leadership, need people that have done it before and have experience doing it. So part of that is maturing our own staff over time. So then we have all that in place. I think it's so important that the government take on that overarching program management role and have these disciplines and mature those disciplines in the way that we will do it at DHS so that we can instantiate that, we can learn from that. I mean, we were turning out programs where within 12 to 18 months, they were delivering their first release. That is best practice. And that's where I'd like to see the Department of Homeland Security. And Vivek Kundra has asked me to take on a co-chair of the Best Practices Committee at the federal level. That's what I want to see us drive at the federal government level as well.
Federal agencies encounter millions of malicious attempts per day to access their networks. It's no wonder cybersecurity is at the top of the list of challenges facing CIOs and their agencies. Every radar network, link, and every phone line that makes the FAA system work could be potential targets. Here's Dave Bowen, CIO at FAA, on cybersecurity threats and what he's doing to combat them.
You're right. The FAA's networks are a favorite target of malicious cyber activity. And as I reported earlier, the cyber activity part of it is one of my primary operating responsibilities. So we oversee all of those kinds of activities. And I can tell you that right now we're logging about 7 million cyber alerts per day. And over 2,000 of those require further investigation each and every day. So we are certainly a favorite target, and we have to take serious steps to deal with that. We've seen a big uptick over the last couple of years. Having strong walls at the boundaries, which was our approach a couple of years ago, is no longer enough. You need to have protection inside the networks. Even though our air traffic control systems are isolated from the outside world and have never been breached, that isolation is no longer sufficient protection in and of itself. The bad guys are getting very good. Their objective is to evade detection now, and we're moving to processes that enable us to detect them based on their behavior once they get in, because you're very hard-pressed these days to keep them out. The strategy is not only to try to keep them out, but if they do get in, you've got to basically be in a position to minimize the damage.
Minimizing damage is key, but eradicating these cyber threats is going to be a long journey. Here's Vance Hitch of DOJ.
This is a long journey. We've been working on this cybersecurity at the department now for quite a while in terms of trying to upgrade our capabilities. The interesting and challenging thing, but also sometimes frustrating, is the threat, as you say, just keeps growing. And that's because the threat, it's not uniform, it's diverse. I mean, it can be everything from a high school student who wants to play a prank to a nation state who has every intent of getting at what we're doing and is focused on doing that and has hordes of people who are. I'm doing all that I can to make sure that when the threats come at us, first of all, we can prevent them if possible. We know enough about it to keep it out. If it does get in, we want to detect it as soon as possible. We want to analyze it, and we want to remediate it. So we have to have all those capabilities in-house in order to do that, and we have to be able to do it in a real near-time manner.
In the end, successful cyber and IT security efforts rest on a change of institutional culture and habits. How is technology transforming the way government agencies operate? We will explore this question and so much more when we return to the special edition of the Business of Government Hour. The term cloud computing is suddenly everywhere, with government leaders, industry executives, and the press all talking excitedly about this new concept. Moving to the Cloud, An Introduction to Cloud Computing and Government by David Wild examines both the interest in and the technology surrounding cloud computing and why it is receiving such increased attention. It tackles such questions as, what is cloud computing? What are some of the top challenges facing government leaders pursuing cloud computing strategies? You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. As society has become increasingly dependent on information technology in government, business, and in our personal lives, safeguarding private information created or shared on computers or the internet has taken on greater significance. How do you keep information secure in an increasingly interconnected and networked world? What is cybersecurity? Pick up the latest Center report, Cybersecurity Management in the States, and find out. You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to this Leader Speaks edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation on the intersection of government mission and technology. Over the past decade, while the private sector was consolidating data centers, the federal government increased its data centers from 432 to over 1,100, leading to redundant investment, reduced energy efficiency, and poor service delivery. With the FY11 budget, the Obama administration introduced a new initiative, a government-wide initiative to consolidate federal data centers, reducing their number and cost. Richard Spires, CIO at Homeland Security, outlines the benefits of data center consolidation and his efforts in realizing them.
I think that the benefits are manifold. Obviously, we talk a lot today about going green, and with the proliferation of data centers, DHS, in our baseline inventory, we've actually located 41 data centers within DHS, okay, just as an example of that. So right there it says we should be looking to consolidate it from a power and energy saving standpoint, let alone all the other benefits that are more IT related, if you will, such as our ability to foster more efficiencies in how we run our operation on the IT side, the cost savings, clearly, the security benefits that come with this, because we can get to one security architecture much more easily by having these all these systems consolidated at a much smaller number of data centers. Those are the benefits that that we certainly see by doing this. And that's one of the reasons, too, having done it at DHS, when they asked me to help at the federal level with this, I thought, sure, I mean, I can draw upon the lessons learned that we have in order to help hopefully other agencies and departments as they look at data center consolidation. I think there's huge potentials, as I mentioned, in cost efficiencies, but also in energy efficiencies, and then in some of these other more intangible things, like fostering more efficiencies on how we share information and being in a more secure IT posture than we are today through this data center consolidation initiative.
Fostering secure platforms and realizing IT efficiencies are key to the success of data center consolidation. Dave Bowen at FAA explains.
We see significant benefits. We think there are going to be greater efficiencies, reduced operating costs, certainly better security, more standardization, greater opportunities for disaster recovery, and increased server utilization. For instance, we found in our networks, our servers were running in the order of 7 to 11%. You know, that if we can take that up, we get opportunities around better utilization, more efficiencies, better power consumption, and things like that. The challenges are mostly cultural. There are lots of server huggers out there, and reluctance to consolidate IT infrastructure across our lines of business. Most commercial companies have recognized this issue and dealt with it over the last several years. They went through a big consolidation effort, and it saved millions. And I think in the upcoming years, where we're going to be challenged in terms of budgets as a government agency, we need to do the best we can to save this money and at least be able to put those funds back into things that add more value to our mission.
Budget constraints demand cost-saving measures. Cloud computing has the potential to lower operating costs. Dr. David McClure, Associate Administrator at the U.S. General Services Administration, tells us more of the advantages of cloud computing in an era of tight IT budgets.
Cloud computing, you know, is the new fad. Some say it's nothing new. It's really old stuff repackaged. It is a different type of computing model in which you're really taking the power of the internet and the connectivity of the internet, and you're creating ability to store and process and compute information, and I'm doing it in a fashion that's very elastic. It's just like talking about the economy and what affects the job rate and the inflation rate. Cloud computing lies in the eyes of the beholder. But we are moving in this direction. In a general sense, cloud computing offers enormous economies of scale advantages for the government. It gets us out of several things. One is running huge infrastructure. We began using the infrastructure of the internet to run a lot of our data storage and computational and distribution needs for information. And that's really what GSA's role is. It's to deliver operationally what we want to do in government. I'm trying to think about how we can actually move this into adoption and operationalize cloud computing. So we're behind the apps.gov storefront. We're playing the role of, again, facilitating and trying to get these things moving so that we can help agencies adopt them as quickly as possible.
Adopting this new approach is happening in different ways throughout the federal agencies. Here's Richard Spires on his efforts.
I alluded to earlier this idea of a private cloud, and that's been our main focus on these two data centers, is to set up a virtualized environment that we can then provide a base set of services to the components in order to provide their end user capability. So in some instances, we're moving legacy applications in kind of as they exist. But in others, we're bringing in applications. I mean, email is a great example. We're bringing it in as a service offering now so that they don't have to worry about running an email system anymore. And we still have each component running their own email system. We'll run it as a virtualized service essentially for them. So you have that level of cloud offering. And then under that, we do then virtualize like the servers. We're looking at what does it make sense for DHS to buy from commercial service providers and their cloud offerings. And so we're trying to be smart about this.
Terrorist attacks, natural disasters, and large-scale criminal incidents too often are case studies for revealing weaknesses in our national information sharing capabilities. Van Hitch, CIO at the U.S. Department of Justice, tells us more about his efforts in this area.
This is something that's certainly been a major emphasis of mine for a long time. We have a program at the department called LAISP, Law Enforcement Information Sharing Program. We started that many, many years ago. I'm going to say 5 or 6 years ago from a planning stage. And we're still implementing, but we're well along in implementation. So we've actually implemented a lot of the capabilities. LAISP is really, in a broad sense, a commitment from the Department of Justice to share information broadly within the law enforcement area of the workforce, and meaning the state and locals, other federal agencies, as well as the intelligence agencies. LAISP focuses on the broad, unclassified area because that's the area where we have to share broadly with state, local, and tribal law enforcement across the United States. So it's much more than an IT initiative. It's really deals with policy, it deals with culture change, and it deals with different ways of doing things. I think truly LAISP is and will change the way law enforcement's done in the United States. When we started building LAISP, we adopted something called NIEM, National Information Exchange Model. And that was adopted also by the Department of Homeland Security early in its beginnings. I worked with the CIO of the Department of Homeland Security to get them to adopt it. That has been extremely helpful in this objective of information sharing because it is a standard for data exchange and XML standards for message exchange, like the Amber Alert. Is an example of how NIEM standard message format. And what it does is facilitates, if we put the information in this format, which we do in all of our systems, we standardize it on Department of Justice, they standardize it in Department of Homeland Security, it makes our systems more accessible, more shareable. Health and Human Services is beginning to adapt NIEM. The state and local organizations across the United States are adapting NIEM. NIEM is a success story that started out in law enforcement and is very much important for our information sharing story, but it's got applicability way beyond across all government.
Innovation is also critical in how government leverages technology to meet its varied and complex missions. Dr. Bobby Braun, chief technologist at NASA, offers his perspective.
the pace of innovation and the pace of our communications and relationships are getting faster and faster. So I think to be a good leader today, what it's really all about is integrating. It's about taking knowledge from something you're doing over here on the right and learning something from that and applying it to a new problem, maybe over here on the left. It's about integrating knowledge from disparate fields and bringing that together in innovative ways. It's about new products and new markets for those products. The pace of innovation is so great that what we need are people that are thinking outside the box everywhere. We need them in the laboratory for their brilliant ideas and for their leadership in taking those brilliant ideas to market in a new way. What's needed are a few things. First, a clear focus on what's important. You know, why are we doing technology innovation? In my view, we're not doing it just to go play in the sandbox and see what kind of gadgets we can develop. We want to invest in technology at NASA because it will enable much grander missions in the future. It will enable us to explore with robotic precursors and ultimately with humans in space at a much faster scale and in a more sustainable manner. Secondly, we need a stability of purpose. And we need, frankly, a stability in the budget. We need consistency in our direction. That's the stability of purpose part. We can't be moving in a certain direction in technology this year and then have a dramatic shift next year. Because, frankly, the investments that we're making are long-term investments. They take a few years to come to fruition. And the only way we're going to get these disruptive and emergent technologies into our space program is through a portfolio approach where we make a wide variety of investments, high-risk investments, frankly. Some of them will grow into amazing technological solutions for our future. Some will not. And so the other thing that we need to be successful is we do need to have strong project management skill and expertise in nourishing and nurturing those investments that are flourishing and, frankly, cutting off and terminating those that are not. And that has proved to be a challenge. Both of those have proved to be a challenge in government programs in the past.
We will focus on the future when we return to Leaders Speak, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. Management of government projects, programs, and portfolios and the related expenditures of public funds are major visible areas of interest and concern. Despite a growing stream of successful program and projects, failures continue at an alarming rate. Pick up the latest Center report, Project Management in Government, An Introduction to Earned Value Management, and find out how this powerful methodology can make your projects more successful. You can order or download a free copy of this and all of our Center reports at businessofgovernment.org. Whether it's the federal government's role in emergency management, its efforts in making operations more sustainable, responsible, and efficient, or the challenges being faced and innovations being forged by local governments during difficult economic times, the Spring 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine offers timely, relevant, and thoughtful perspectives on all of these issues from leading practitioners and public managers. Hi, I'm Michael Keegan, managing editor of the Business of Government magazine, and we know it's all about making connections, introducing our readers and connecting them to the work of government executives who are leading agencies or initiatives that are focused on critical missions, missions important to them. In our latest edition of the Spring 2010 Business of Government magazine, we bring you conversations with FEMA Administrator Craig Fugate, who talks to us about the challenges facing his agency. Michelle Moore, Federal Environmental Executive, outlines sustainability efforts in greening federal operations. And Robert Doerr, Commissioner of the New York City Human Resources Administration, sheds light on how his agency is doing more with less. Our forum is dedicated to exploring ways government leaders and all leaders can make better decisions. All of this and so much more in the Spring 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order your free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to this Leaders Speaks edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation on the intersection of government mission and technology. What emerging technologies hold the most promise for enhancing how government meets its mission? Dr. David McClure, Associate Administrator at GSA, places this in perspective.
Well, you know, I think we'll be challenged in this velocity game of trying to just continue to deliver effective solutions on a government-wide basis. One is called FedSpace, in which we're trying to create a collaboration platform across the entire federal government. So rather than creating a collaboration space just within NASA or USDA or Interior, we want to create a platform that allows government employees to communicate with each other across the entire government. I think it's game-changing because it just opens up ideas, thinking, communities of practice, just a completely different way of operating. I oftentimes cannot reach somebody now because I don't know their email address, I've lost their phone number, or they've moved and it's changed. If we have an online collaboration tool, we can connect people in government instantaneously, permanently, and create value propositions around those relationships in ways that I don't even know if we can truly appreciate that completely right now. Create a wiki space, create blogs, create some lightweight workflow so that I could actually organize something online, get some work done, and get value out of it without tremendous amount of effort being put into it. So I think those are real challenges for us, are some of these new initiatives. We're also working on a citizen services dashboard. We're trying to take what would be meaningful performance data of government to a citizen, not to confuse it with program evaluation measures, but if I'm a citizen, what is it that would tell me that government's actually being effective? So we're trying to take operational measures of government. How long does it take to get a tax return? How long does it take for me to get a Social Security disability claim resolved? How long do I have to stand in line at an airport in order to clear security? What's the average wait time? And is it going up? Is it going down? And what's being done about it? So we want to move some of this transparency into the performance arena, but translate it into things that the average person would find some utility in. And I think that's going to be key for us in terms of challenges. One of the biggest technology challenges going forward is analytics. I think we have actually moved into, finally, we're moving into the age of information management. We've created or are creating more of a tsunami of information and data. We've got to be able to sift and sort and analyze and get value out of this information because it's a gold mine. So I think the analytical space is going to be the space where CIOs and IT departments are going to be asked to step up and figure out a little bit more coherently knowledge management, business intelligence, proactive problem solving that's ahead of the curve rather than behind the curve, moving from compliance and reporting to active use of information to really do jobs in a good way. That's going to be a real challenge for us going forward technology-wise.
Richard Speyer, CIO at DHS, stresses that in the end, it's all about meeting the mission. Information technology and technology in general is used to meet and achieve agency mission.
It really is all about the mission, right, out there in the field. And so one of the things that the technology is changing so rapidly in is as that technology continues to evolve and we can leverage that technology, the ability to get information in the field, the right kind of information at the right time for them to be able to effectively do their job, sometimes can mean life or death. That's very critical to us. I've always believed that a successful CIO it's not just about technology. To be an effective CIO, to bring that leadership, really means you have to be able to work well in a very heterogeneous environment. And be able to bring people together and really show them, I mean, even sell them on these concepts of how you can govern more effectively and bring people together to make better decisions for the department that then will enable us to bring technologies to bear to help mission effectiveness. And so that's a whole set of skills and experiences and CIOs that are well beyond the technology role.
Van Hitch, CIO at Justice, offers his perspective on the evolving role of the CIO, as well as some insights into the future.
I think the key way it's evolved is the CIO needs to be more
of a change agent and is becoming more of a change agent. In some cases, that's very difficult to do based on organizational positioning and so forth. But that's what you really need to do to be successful. And I think that's gradually happening. And I think it's gradually happened because I think society in general recognizes the key role that technology plays in our lives and the key role it can play in our success in whatever we do, whatever our mission is. And that's certainly true in the federal government. So I think becoming a change agent, but not, you know, not for the sake of technology, we're changing to make the mission more successful. That's the key. That is the key evolution that I think the CIO role has to have, and I think it is in the process of doing so.
The country deserves and expects a government that is efficient, accountable, and vigilant stewards of the public trust. In an increasingly interconnected and networked world, vision and leadership are key to the successful use of technology in meeting the varied and complex missions of government. Here's Dave McClure, Associate Administrator at GSA, on leadership.
A good leader is a good listener. I think to be effective in today's environment, particularly as we move more and more to online communication and collaboration, a challenge for a leader in government is actually to be comfortable in that environment, that you allow employees to interact with you directly, that you run open, transparent conversations and meetings, and we don't have a, you know, hierarchical chain of command. But I think we've moved into a very fluid, agile working environment that requires leaders to pay a lot of attention to the interaction and communications of leadership in a very dynamic way.
Dave Bowen, CIO at FAA, points out that though the skill sets haven't changed, some things have.
I would tell you that the skill sets largely haven't changed. But a couple of things that I would point out, no longer are there any sort of things sort of like normal operating hours. Everything runs 24/7. I think the increased networking and interconnectedness, if you will, of our people and our infrastructure forces a greater degree of standardization and a greater emphasis on configuration management. It also forces a much greater degree of collaboration and forces you to evaluate what are the consequences of your actions on others before you take them. When we had our own stovepipe applications running in our own line of business, you know, you could just do what you wanted to and not worry about the impact of others. And I don't think that's true anymore.
Vance Hitch ends this Leader Speaks edition of the Business of Government Hour, offering his perspective.
I think being an effective leader, you have to have a vision. You have to be somebody who kind of feels strongly about that vision. Something has to drive you because otherwise it's just too hard. So you have to have a vision. I think in the federal government in particular, you need to have a sense of teamwork and a sense of partnership because things are more complex. The projects are bigger and badder. It's very difficult to get anything done alone. You've got to work in teams. You've got to work with alliances and partnerships, and I use that in a broad sense. So I think that is really key to being a good leader and a successful leader, especially in the federal government. Obviously, you need to kind of stay abreast of technology. One thing as a CIO that I always have stressed to new people coming into the organization is I want people always to recognize, and I think this is part of the answer to your question about what it takes to be a leader as a CIO, you have to remember that we're not there in and of ourselves. We're there to serve the mission.
Technology is a powerful tool, but it alone will not improve performance. In the end, the insights offered today underscore the importance of leadership, vision, and a government based on results and accountability. We hope you've enjoyed this special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Leaders Speak, a conversation on the intersection of technology and government mission. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. How can government cut costs and improve performance? How are disruptive innovations saving lives on the battlefield and expanding our presence in space? What is the U.S. Postal Service doing to reduce its carbon footprint? How are federal agencies becoming more transparent and open? And how are state and local governments doing more with less? Tune in to the Business of Government magazine next week and find out.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the only radio station dedicated to news for and about the federal government and government contractors. Find us at federalnewsradio.com. Federalnewsradio.com, your source for federal news now. CNN.